Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Simon Tam in Hong Kong, looking out over the harbour. How are you, Simon?
I'm extremely well. It's a bit of a grey old day out here. Sorry, we couldn't turn the sunshine on for you, especially coming from freezing UK.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. At least I can see the harbour. My hotel room, I can see is an apartment block.
So. It's actually a fake view of the harbour. You can buy pictures of the harbour quite very easily in Hong Kong to stick on your windows.
Oh, is that posters. What it is?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Excellent. What we're going to be doing today is talking about Chinese wine and the Chinese wine regions. I must admit, I don't know too much about China as a wine producing country, but I know, for example, the Canadians and they're showing the Chinese how to produce ice wine and things like that. But do you want to give us a big overview of China?
Oh, absolutely. You know, a little known fact, and I think this is probably the biggest shocker on the planet Earth, is that China actually produces more wine than the whole of Australia and has been for the last three vintages.
I knew that they were one of the biggest grape producers.
Wine grapes and wine producers. Wine grape specific. And on top of that, China, the figure is not entirely reliable, but somewhere in the vicinity of 15 to 20, 25% of bulk wines to be blended with domestic production. Now, that's pretty hefty. I think adding and compounding that, the fact that very few bottles of Chinese-made wines are made it outside of China and only really seen in cliché Chinese restaurants as far north as Verona in Italy and as far south as Buenos Aires Chinese restaurants. Two and two, four and four put together means that there is a Chinese wine industry. Chinese are drinking wine quite ferociously, actually. And in terms of wine regions, by and far, most of the wines have always been made in and around Beijing in the northern part of the China, where in winter it gets down to minus 20, where the vines had to be buried a few, tens of centimetres down so that they survive the harsh winter. But more recently, and in the very high profile, joint ventures between Chateau Lafite and the Chinese government, where they set up this wonderful vineyard in Shandong province, I beg your pardon. Shandong province is northeast. Okay, so there is a little bit of a coastal sort of region, so that we'll watch this space. But the Chinese industry has actually been going for a few centuries, believe it or not. In the years gone by, it was always sort of used as a bit of a health tonic, and or in the 1892, I think, was actually where the first winery was founded with a joint venture partner, namely a cognac producer. All of that, it's given Chinese long, not terribly well-known, certainly overshadowed by France and the rest of Europe and indeed New World countries, a sustainable wine industry.
And Chinese grape varieties, they've got their own grape varieties. I've heard of Noble Dragon. Is that right?
There are a lot of weird and wonderful, wicked grape varieties that, quite simply, when you translate it into English, makes no sense. It's a little bit like there's a Portuguese grape variety called a fly's dropping.
A fly's dropping?
Yeah, flies, yes. So, but these there are a lot of vernifera varieties, but I think one of the things that, also very interesting in China is that not just vernifera, but also all sorts of,
You mean vitis vinifera?
Vitis vinifera varieties, but also the other varieties that, for example, glory vines, for example, decorative vines that really produce not a hell of a lot of fruit at all. There are also a lot of mutated varieties, species as well in China. But by and far, in a modern, sort of a more contemporary wine world in China, we're looking at primarily French selected clones and then sort of nurtured and propagated in China. So the likes of Cabernet Sauvignon, true Cabernet Sauvignon, true Merlot, true Chardonnay, Semillon, Crucian, Muscat, these sort of grape variety. Rieslings, it's debatable whether it's true Riesling or one of those sort of funny Riesling or Welsh Riesling or it's not even Riesling at all. But I think what is very interesting is that, grape varieties is very important in the West, indeed most part of the world, but you know, in China, it really is about the quality of wine at a price, and also the fact that it is made in China. And I think that makes it quite culturally significant, because there are a lot of people in China. Not all of them have got huge disposable income. They are very proudly Chinese. So when you have wine, which is primarily a Western lifestyle, that is affordable and it's made in China, you have no shortages of marketing opportunity in a fast-growing economy like China.
Are they quite parochial about their consumption?
Extremely parochial, much more so than the Italians. I mean, the Piemontese will never drink a glass of wine from Valpolicella and vice versa. What is very interesting is that, made in China, it may not be all that significant as a brand concept elsewhere in the world, but in China, it reigns absolute resonance with everybody and everybody. And I think also what is very important also to remember is that it is a big, 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 big nation of people. We invented fireworks, we invented, debatably, whether it's us or Marco Polo, navigation systems, and charting the sky, the night sky, and so on. So there's a lot of proudness. Now, does it mean that there is absolutely no opportunities for imports? Well, no, because one day, sooner or later, the 10 or so very powerful brands in China, they serve the purpose of educating and growing and nurturing a new generation and reinforcing an established generation of wine lovers. And one day, sooner or later, when the economy grows and is growing, by leaps and bounds at the moment, income per capita goes up, Western lifestyle increasingly permeates and diffuses itself into Chinese culture, it is inevitable that the Chinese wine-loving, platform would grow to a much more international perspective.
What sort of styles of wine are being produced?
Well, that's an extraordinarily good question. I think, for white wine, there are dry wines, there are semi-dry wines, and then, of course, there are ice wines, a lot of which are made actually by the Cabot glaze method. So if you've got a couple of Kelvin... Cabot glaze.
I haven't heard that term.
Yeah, Cabot glaze. So you pick the grapes, not necessarily while it's growing, still evolving. When you pick, at minus 6 degrees, which is what the accord is between Austria, Germany, and Canada, grapes, they're going to be picked frozen on the vines at a minimum of 6 degrees minus, and before it could be, termed ice wine. And then, of course, there are, a whole ocean of red wine made with 20% plus, give or take, of imported bulk wines that are being blended with domestic production.
Just interested in the blending of foreign wines into Chinese wines. Why do they blend the wines in?
Well, the blending of foreign wines used to be the wine lake of Europe, and more recently South America, Australia. It's primarily to give the wine a little bit more structure, primarily because, viticulturally, China is still catching up, keeping in mind that it's one of the oldest economies of the world, like right next to Italy, Portugal, Spain, and Greece, where, farming, it's all about yield. It's not always about quality. And when you have international producers such as Australia, where yield is limited, more or less, depends on how much you're paying per litre internationally, you could actually glean a fair amount of reward and fair amount of positive contribution to the finished blend. I think more important...
Well, so are you saying that Chinese wine is high yielding, and by having a lower yielding wine blended in, it just gives it a bit of guts?
It's not always about high yielding. It is always about flavor. And I think, when you see that, if you are making a spaghetti dish in Iceland, where tomatoes are not terribly ripe, what do? You import it. And so that's exactly what we're looking at for China. And I think the other thing that is also very, very important to point out is the fact that Chinese actually drink a bucket load of wines, much more so than what the current domestic vineyards can actually supply, and hence the imports. And I think that is much more realistic view of it than sort of looking at wine from a very scientific perspective of blendings, for structure, for length, and for all the other sort of winey minded concepts.
If you look at a world map, the reason my company is called 3050 is because grapes generally grow between latitudes 30 and 50 degrees latitude, subject to certain other climatic conditions and whether you're continental and all that sort of stuff. But if you draw a 30-50 degree line, it goes smack through China. And I'm just surprised that you say that they don't ripen the grapes enough in China, because, you know, we're in Hong Kong. Across the ditch is China, effectively, or new territories, and it's pretty hot here at the moment. So I would have thought there's enough energy coming in to ripen grape.
That's an extremely good point. You know, the whole concept of 30-50 latitude north, you know, big swag of it goes right across the northern central part of China. The biggest problem are two. One is the fact that, you know, we're looking at an extraordinarily large continental landmass, much larger than any part of Europe, many less rivers, many less lakes, many less, you know, wonderful aspects and attitudes that moderates the mesal environment. And at the same time, we also have an extremely, basically, it's a desert, you know, all the way up north that actually blows horrifically, you know, into China. Sandstorm, it's the main feature of anybody living north of Shanghai. You know, you just basically have to clean your car filter and windows and make sure you have windows wind up every year just before the storm hits. Otherwise, you're in deep trouble with a vacuum cleaner. That also gets clogged up and so on and so forth. So I think that is one thing. But also the other thing, too, is that it's actually landscape. Latitude is just one thing. And then, of course, you know, you've got, you know, vineyard areas of wines or vineyards like those in Bali, for example. You know, they actually crop as many as four times a year. So the French winemaker down there actually makes four vintages a year, you know. So latitude is just one thing. And then the other thing is about finding soil. And then when you're looking at a north continental climate in a big piece of land, finding, you know, labor, finding workmen to go and actually live there and living the life of not even luxury, but going into a life of desertship, it's something else altogether.
I've got some maps I use at tastings that show the temperature, upper and lower temperature bands of where wines are typically grown around the world. And there, it is true that that band does contract as you go through China. And I presume it's because of the coldness north.
Absolutely.
Or maybe the heat further south. But there's still quite a big chunky band there. One of the reasons that I've always thought that China is producing one is partly to do with government edict about don't use rice for alcohol, use grapes because they grow in pretty horrible locations and they like horrible locations where normal farm land isn't appropriate. Is that true or...?
Yeah, no, it's very, very much the case. But then I think, you know, if you look at the relative proximity of, say, the Douro River, the Douro Valley to sort of population, you know, it is only a couple of hours drive from the city of Oporto, which is one of the largest, busiest European ports in the world. You know, but that is not the case in China. So it actually becomes a little bit of a chicken first or egg first. Are there any great lands, terroir, using a much bantered around word for winemaking, for grape growing? Yes, there are. But are people going to go there and live there? No. I think the other thing, too, is that there is still a lot of, I mean, China as an economy has only really joined the WTO a few years ago, and its topography and its climatology mapping is still at its very, very infant sort of a stage. What would be interesting is to see in another in 5 years' time, we're going to see a lot more, you know, partnerships, the likes of the Chateau Lafite in China, where they will bring in a couple of centuries of know-how, a little bit more satellite imagery, a little bit more, you know, core sampling to help them determine where else in China are going to be suitable for winemaking. And more, and especially, of course, the other thing too, of course, is that, you know, when you're establishing a winery, it would be kind of nice to actually pay the winemaker a reasonable amount of salary that says, you know what, you're going to be stuck there for 4 months of the year, but the other part, you know, other 8 months of the year, you can go and party the hell you like.
Is that not what happens at the moment?
No. Okay.
Touched on a couple of regions. You've said sort of around Beijing and north-east China. What sort of producers should people keep an eye out for? Because in the UK, I've seen things like Great Wall of China, which I wasn't horribly impressed with. And I've seen a couple of other Chinese wines, which they've been okay, but they haven't really blown my mind too much. Who are the good producers?
Well, look, I think to be fair, quality is always relative to price. And I firmly believe, having done tastings over the years and chairing competitions of just wines made in China, that For the price, for the value, I think you can't do better in Chinese wines. If you compare wines with the same price coming out of Italy, coming out of France, those ones are undrinkable. Wines made in China, possibly, maybe not necessarily exclusively because of the imported bulk wine blending from these sort of sunshine-driven New World countries. Actually, very, very, more than palatable. At a price, it's enjoyable. So I think it needs to be put in some sort of right perspective for any sort of further comparisons to be made. I think also more importantly, the likes of Dynasty, the likes of Great Wall, the likes of Hua Dong, and producers like that, collectively are representing around about 50% of China's production. Now that's pretty substantial. These wines are very technically sound. These wines may not give you that sort of warm and fuzzy this is really great. I've got to have like 10 more glasses of it. Half glasses, because that 10 glasses would be irresponsible, children. But I think there are also a lot of producers that simply don't have the international reach and the capability to market themselves. So companies such as Thailand, Taillan, companies such as Bao Long Bao, which is from just outside of Beijing, companies such as I mentioned briefly before, Hua Dong, which has had a number of Australian supremo technical consultants making some pretty smart Chardonnays. Companies such as Taillan, T-A-I-W-L, I mentioned Taillan before. They also produce a pretty spectacular Chardonnay with its Pernod Ricard connection from around the world. So,
is that the one you gave me? You've given me a bottle to try later on.
Yes, so. that is the Chardonnay that won the best wine from China in the 2009 Cathay Pacific International Wine and Spirits Competition in Hong Kong. Wow. Absolutely, yeah. I hope you enjoy that.
Well, so do I. I'll, at the end of this podcast, I'll give a tasting note for it.
So all in all, they are unsung heroes. And I think it's just really requiring a little bit more time. And I think one of the other issues is that I think wine lovers in the West are in a bit of a hurry, always sort of demanding and extracting, comparable quality wines from China, comparable to France top wines, to Italy top wines, to top Italian wines and so on. And I think the reality is that China is a relatively new industry. Wine industry is relatively new. It's been around for probably no more than 20 years commercially on any sort of scale. It possibly only has consultants and university degrees, taught by traveling wine lecturers and professors from around the world in the last sort of 15. And very, very few winemakers from China are able to travel overseas to learn, quite unlike the Australian flying winemaker scenario. So all in all, I think, we're doing a good job. Just give us a bit more time. Don't be in a bloody hurry. I understand that just going back a month ago, I think one of UK's largest supermarkets, desire and wishes to import wines from China. And I hope that would be the beginning of a new renaissance for the Chinese wine industry.
Where do you think Chinese wine will be in, say, 5 or 10 years' time?
In 5 or 10 years' time, I believe the Chinese wine industry, first and foremost, I think Chinese wine consumers are extraordinarily demanding. So they will continue to push the quality and drive the quality upwards and upwards and upwards and demand orders from local wineries. Secondly, I think in another 5 years' time and with the membership in World Trade Organizations, and already some of my wine professor friends in China already teaching as far afield as South Africa, as South Australia, and I understand that there is a extremely healthy exchanges of intellectual, expertise being bantered around the world, and that's very healthy. I think also, not least of all, there are some wonderful, prolific wine consultants or viticultural consultants that actually work the world platform, and surely China would benefit. And I think as the economy grows stronger, the farmer's mentality to produce quantity instead of quality will be only be rewarded by higher financial reward. And hopefully that would be the tipping point or beginning of a tipping point of quality-minded viticulture, which of course provides, as we know, the raw material for the end product. So I believe that is well underway. I also believe that there are a couple other producers such as Grace Vineyard that are, just quite methodical in their marketing of their wines from around the world.
They're the ones with the funky like it's a red building, isn't it? With red roofs. Right. I've seen photos of it. Looks very nice.
No, they really are reinvesting in their own roots. Take a bit of a pun there, but I think there's some really really good operators, and that will just becoming more and more so.
Okay, then Simon, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Thank you
very much.
Welcome.